With SDPB News, I'm Megan Feary. One of the country's tech giants is partnering with a tribal-owned wind farm project in South Dakota. The Ocheti-Shakowee Power Authority is one of the 15 businesses selected for Apple's inaugural Impact Accelerator program. Apple will provide training and networking for Black, Hispanic, and Native American-owned eco-friendly businesses. SDPB's Ariel Zients has more on the project and its new partnership.
The Ocheti-Shakowee Power Authority is owned by six tribes and hopes to build wind farms on the Pine Ridge and Cheyenne River reservations. Lyle Jack is a member of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and chairman of the Power Authority. He says the project aligns with the tribe's values and geography.
We are taught to take care of the Mother Earth, or we call her Mchimaka, which is Grandmother Earth, and take care of the environment that we live in. That's why tribes are against pipelines and digging for oil or gas. Secondly, renewable energy is clean energy that falls within our beliefs. Thirdly is we have an abundance of wind, some of the best wind resources in the United States.
The wind farms won't be generating energy for the tribes. Instead, the energy will be sold to government agencies and corporations, with the revenues being invested back with the tribes. Lyle says the project will benefit from the Impact Accelerator program.
Well, it's going to open some doors to either, some potential energy buyers. It's going to get our name out there. To be affiliated with Apple is always a feather in anyone's cap in the business world. Also, allows us to share ideas with other companies that are going through the same thing we are.
The wind project won't need state permits since it's a federally chartered company being built on tribal land. It's going through an environmental assessment and will need to be approved by federal agencies. The Power Authority hopes to begin construction by 2023 and go online the next year. I'm SDPB's Ariel Zients.
The State Department of Health reports 395 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 and two new deaths. This includes cases from over the weekend. The latest fatalities bring the state's death toll to 2,055. Active cases are at their highest level since April. There are 1,639 active COVID cases in the state and 92 people hospitalized. Of those patients, 11 are on ventilators. 40 out of South Dakota's 66 counties report at least one new case. Pennington County has the most new cases with 100. Minnehaha County follows with 77. Slightly more than 60% of the population 12 and older have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Just over 55% of state residents 12 and older now have the full vaccine series. Over 525,000 vehicles entered Sturgis during this year's motorcycle rally. That's up 14% from last year. The State Department of Transportation places rubber tubes across roads that count vehicles driving over them. The count is lower than the 75th rally. More than 747,000 vehicles entered Sturgis that year. Police in Rapid City are working to identify a person of interest in a homicide investigation. Authorities have already made one arrest in the fatal shooting of 20-year-old Austin Freeman last Friday. A 31-year-old man is being held on probable murder and drug charges. Investigators say they are also looking for a woman in connection with the case. Police Captain James Johns says it appears Freeman was in the wrong place at the wrong time and was an innocent victim of violence associated with drugs. A witness to an incident last week involving MyPillow chief executive Mike Lindell says he saw no reason for Lindell to claim he was attacked at a South Dakota hotel. Lindell was in Sioux Falls hosting an election fraud symposium. He told the crowd last week he was in pain after being attacked late Wednesday. Lindell later explained that a man had aggressively poked him while the two were posing for a photo. But a conference attendee who was taking the photo says, quote, "There was no attack," end quote. The federal government is making an HIV treatment called PrEP free to the public, but only for those with health insurance. The South Dakota Department of Health reports over 700 people in the state are living with the disease. SDPB's Laura Johnson reports.
There's no cure for HIV, but prevention methods are effective in stopping further transmission of the virus. If left unchecked, the virus can turn into AIDS, a deadly disease. Dr. Susan Hoover specializes in infectious disease at Sanford Health. She says pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, is 99% effective in preventing infections from sexual contact.
For some people, even if they had insurance, there were still copays, not only for the medication, but for the associated office visits and lab tests. So I think that this could be a game changer for many people. As you know, being insured doesn't guarantee that you can still afford your medical costs.
Cassie Deffenbaugh is an administrator in the Office of Disease Prevention Services with the South Dakota Department of Health. She says racial disparities in HIV cases are concerning.
Our Black or African American population make up about 2.3% of South Dakota's population, but about 24% of HIV cases. Native Americans and American Indians make up about 9% of South Dakota's population, but are 17% of those cases. So certainly some disparities there that we work on lessening and decreasing, whether it's barriers to access to care or getting people into treatment and care for all South Dakotans.
Deffenbaugh says increasing access to PrEP prevents HIV from spreading even further across the state. For SDPB, I'm Laura Johnson.
One man is on a mission to inspire young people to pursue careers in science and technology. The historic preservation officer for the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe says he's working for the future. SDPB's Jenna Scott has the story.
Gary Kills 100 does a lot of his work with drones and ground-penetrating radar. The technology uses electric pulses to let people detect what's beneath the surface. Kills 100 has used the radar with First Presbyterian Church in Flandreau to look for unmarked graves at the cemetery. The church can then put up a monument to mark the grave instead of leaving it lost underground. Accurate locations also prevent the church from accidentally digging up a grave in the future. Kills 100 is working with young tribal members to teach some of this technology.
Because of the social pathologies that we have on the reservation, I think that the one way we have to address this is through as many different ways as we can. And science and technology is going to be one of them.
Kills 100 demonstrates his equipment to kids at Marty Indian School. The pandemic put the brakes on these school demonstrations, but he plans to resume his school trips as a way to share his knowledge with students.
Helping other tribes will be a top priority too, just so that they can be exposed to this technology that we have here.
Kills 100 thinks this can open up potential careers to many Native Americans. For example, once they become registered as a licensed drone pilot, they can work independently or for a company.
Trying to get companies and tribes and different entities to accept younger people to do these jobs that they do so effortlessly. That's what I'm hoping comes to not just reservations, but everybody.
Kills 100 says he is already seeing a spark amongst kids who are interested in science.
And I really do think that some of these young people are following their spirit because they're talking. They'll go to a class and then they'll talk about, well, yeah, but in a few years we could do this. They're already thinking about the future and how they can use this technology.
Gary Kills 100 is continuing work with the church and community. He hopes to expand his travel to include more schools. I'm SDPB's Jenna Scott in Flandreau.
The Gem Theater in Phillips, South Dakota is open to the public for the first time since the pandemic began. The Gem Theater closed its doors in March 2020. Earlier this year, a snowstorm caused an electrical surge that took out their only projector.
And it just fried the board and our projector. And there was no replacing it because parts were obsolete. And then we found out that Our insurance didn't even cover a penny of it. And so that was very disheartening.
That's Amy Miner. Her parents bought the Gem Theater in 2008, and she manages it. The small theater has been around since the early 1900s. Miner's family converted it to a digital theater in 2012. It wasn't cheap, about $65,000. They had just finished paying that off when the snowstorm hit. A new projector would cost $40,000. Miner's parents were ready to throw in the towel, but Amy didn't want to give up. She received some small business COVID-19 relief grants, but it wasn't enough, so she started fundraising.
We had a lot of community members that stepped up and donated. We had a barbecue fundraiser, and we ended up with two buns at the end of it. So many people came out.
Miner set up a GoFundMe page. Someone printed Save the Gem t-shirts to sell. Miner says people really wanted to help. The Gem Theater is the only movie theater for almost 70 miles in any direction.
Just tonight, we have people from Wall, Kadoka, north of Milesville, Quinn, Phillip, and all over in between.
Miner says their reopening attracted a small crowd, but she's just relieved to be open again. This is not Miner's primary source of income. She works full-time at a daycare.
You make ends meet. That's about all you make here. And, you know, that's fine. We're just here because the kids in this community need a place to go. And so does everybody else.
The Gem Theater is open Friday through Monday. The 8th Circuit Court of Appeals has issued opinions on two ag-gag laws, one out of Arkansas and the other from Iowa. Ag-gag laws attempt to keep whistleblowers and animal activists from having access to the inner workings of agricultural processing facilities. Those would include slaughterhouses and concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. The Arkansas law threatens civil sanctions for whistleblowers and investigators. The appeals court found that law to be unconstitutional in that it stifles free speech. But the court upheld most of an Iowa law threatening criminal sanctions for people who misrepresent their role to gain access to the facility. Victoria Wicks reports on these opinions for SDPB.
Upton Sinclair's novel, The Jungle, was published in 1906 and forever changed the meatpacking industry. Sinclair exposed disgusting practices and hazardous conditions that spurred federal action, including the Meat Inspection Act, the Pure Food and Drug Act, and eventually the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA. Today, states across the nation have passed ag-gag laws designed to limit access to facilities that conduct animal research, process meat, and raise confined animals. Plaintiffs challenging these laws say the state's intent is to rein in exposés by activists and journalists. Ag-gag laws in two of those states, Arkansas and Iowa, are the subject of two opinions by the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. The 8th Circuit held a special session in February to hear arguments about the Arkansas law that allows owners of animal production facilities to sue anyone, including activists and whistleblowers, for doing harm to the business. This legislation was sponsored by Deanne Vaught, a pig farmer and state legislator. David Moraskin represents the Animal Legal Defense Fund and Animal Equity at oral arguments. He tells the three-judge panel that activists intended to send investigators into Prayer Creek Farm, owned by Deanne Vaught and her husband, as well as into Pico Foods, a poultry processor. But he says those plans were put on hold because of the state law. Activists fearing lawsuits engaged in self-censorship, and as a result, the statute has the unconstitutional effect of chilling free speech. Moraskin says animal activists have a reason to believe there's something to find in these two facilities. He makes two factual allegations about Pico Foods.
First, that they have increased line speed, and second, that they use what a slaughter technique known as live hang.
And he says Deanne Vaught's effort to legislate away any scrutiny suggests there's something to be found.
Plaintiffs explain that they wish to reveal what's going on at Deanne Vaught's farm precisely because she sponsored this law.
Moraskin says the Animal Legal Defense Fund and Animal Equity have fought ag-gag laws across the country, and part of their strategy is to reveal how these laws have been used to suppress facts. Muraskin is asked why plaintiffs can't just take what they know and make it public without entering the facility. He replies plaintiffs want video and other documentation as a valuable component of their constitutionally protected political speech.
They show the information to the public, and they believe that by showing the information to the public, they can build political pressure for change. And that's what they want to do.
The Eighth Circuit finds in favor of the plaintiffs, but not unanimously. Judge Bobby Shepard dissents, saying that plaintiffs' fears of being sued are just speculative until they take a course of action that results in harm to the businesses, such as prosecutions, food safety recalls, citations, and closures. According to online sources, Upton Sinclair went undercover in Chicago meatpacking plants to gather information for his novel, The Jungle. Online sources don't say if he lied to get inside or lied to get a job, but it follows that he might not have gotten through the door had he announced his intentions. In Iowa in 2012, lawmakers made it a crime to gain access or employment at an ag facility by means of false or fraudulent statements. Activists sued, claiming free speech violations. When looking at the effect of a law challenged on free speech grounds, the court has to determine if the law bans the content of the speech or the conduct of the speaker. At oral arguments in September 2020, Assistant Attorney General Jacob Larson defends Iowa's law. He says the state is on solid ground when it criminalizes lying to get inside a facility because it is punishing the conduct, the trespassing, not the speech, the lying.
It's primarily addressed at conduct that is facilitated by false speech. The false speech is integral to the criminal act that's occurring. You wouldn't have a trespass in this case without the false speech.
In its opinion, the judges agreed and upheld that part of Iowa's law. But judges found that the portion of the law criminalizing false statements for employment was too broad because it did not specify that the statements must be material to the hiring process. At oral arguments, Matthew Strugar represents the Animal Legal Defense Fund and four other organizations.
There are historical content-based exclusions from the First Amendment.
Strugar says examples of unprotected speech are threats and obscenity, and he says some forms of dishonesty can carry legal sanctions, perjury, defamation, and fraud, for instance. He acknowledges that the U.S. Supreme Court's Alvarez decision specifically mentions lying to gain employment as a punishable offense, but he says that decision doesn't apply to all statements, such as the kind of puffery an applicant engages in to flatter the boss.
It seems clear that Justice Kennedy's talking about an applicant who exaggerates his qualifications to get a job. And, you know, in that situation, there is a kind of unjust enrichment or some kind of fraud and such that... You know, the employer believes he's bargaining for something that he doesn't get.
Strugar says during his arguments that the Iowa legislature passed a new ag gag law after the lower court enjoined this one, and the new law specifies that the misstatements during job interviews have to be material to be punishable. He says that law is currently tied up in a challenge in district court. If so, that new law might already offer the fix required by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. As with the Arkansas opinion, this appellate panel voted 2-1, with Judge Raymond Grunder dissenting from the court's finding on employment. Judge Stephen Gras concurred with the opinion because it is consistent with current law, but he says it, quote, tests the outer boundaries of protection of speech under the First Amendment. He says this case might pit investigative journalism against private property rights, and he's concerned that this opinion opens a new category of speech that the government can punish through criminal prosecution. Gras says eventually the Supreme Court will have to decide if such laws can be sustained or whether they infringe on the breathing room necessary to fulfill the promise of the First Amendment. The ruling of the Court of Appeals applies to the 7 states within the Eighth Circuit, which includes South Dakota. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Victoria Wicks.
With SDPB News, I'm Megan Feary. And that is your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. And as always, thank you for listening.